Before we begin the show today, a quick word from the previous head coach of the LSU Tigers, Coach O. Oh boy.
I am Coach O, bitch. Former head coach of the LSU Tigers and many more. And you know my resume. I ain't going to waste your time. I know I ain't talked to you in a while. I know y'all been wanting to hear from me, and here I am. I want to say right now, them Saints, they got to find them an offensive coordinator. And I tell you, I know one person they better not get, and that's some bitch got the name of a country north of the United States, and that's Canada. And if Mickey Loomis even talks about Canada, I'm going to walk down the airline highway and whoop Mickey Loomis's ass right now, because that boy, Canada, is a dipstick. And anyway, about football, you know, we had some good playoffs. We got bonehead players costing their team, you know, I mean, that Flowers, you know, he had a good year as a receiver, and then the boy has to taunt somebody, and then all that crap, you know, and then, drop the ball. And then Dan Campbell, I love him, you know, and he aggressive, like Coach O, he got that grit. But sometimes you got to temper that grit, you know, like Sean Payton back in the day running a reverse with Reggie Bush. Sometimes, you got to learn, and I think Campbell may not go for it on fourth down every single time in the future. You know, he might learn something from that. You know, we got a good Super Bowl. You know, we got Mr. Relevant, who's definitely relevant now, and Mahomes, and, Kelsey, and, the teeny bopper singer and all that crap, you know. It's going to be some good football. I'm Coach O, bitch, go Tigers.
The woke Pope left me a voicemail. The woke Pope himself. The only person that Bro Exotic, Vice Pope of Cal, Church of Woke, reports to. And he's coming on next week for Bro Exotic's annual review. I don't know about you, but I got a lot of blood pumping down there. I got a little swell right now. Let's check out the woke Pope's angry and utter, there's a lot of disdain here, his voicemail. To me, a privilege.
Good day, Mr. Belts. I must first express my dismay at being subjected to this electronic voice message taker. I am unaccustomed to not being engaged by a live personage beyond one ring. That aside, I must tell you that my man has informed me that I shall be appearing on your show, I suppose they call it, for Mr. Bro Exotic's annual review. Lest I remind you, Mr. Belts, I shall not tolerate interruption or insolence. Let it be known, let it be recorded.
There's no stopping what can be stopped. No killing what can't be
something up your way.
Now to the task at hand.
What is going on, Wimbenyama?
I know that you wish to speak about your sports games incessantly, but I am here for a different purpose.
Welcome to the Sports Antidote, episode 189, hiding in plain sight. Creed is asking, are you ready? And so am I. You're going to need to be ready. The drug neighbor's popping in here with a little soliloquy. The young Woken.
Wait, Sundance isn't just undefeated against the top 20 most violent cities in America. He's also 7-0 ATS in those games.
He's going to come back to talk about the Green Bay Phoenix Rip. Listen to this guy. It's ridiculous. Bro Exotic.
And the Woke equation kind of like told us that, dude. It's like, you know, we're going to go high on the Ravens. We're going to set up a bunch of Buffalo Riot Wings. And as soon as a white man hits Lamar Jackson.
He's going to talk about Taylor Swift. What's going on here? See, this is what's incredible about this show. What, you think I'm done? Think again, because somebody else is coming up in this mug. That's right. That's right, the woke Pope. How do you feel about that? It is all being assembled, similar to Voltron. This is going to be a great one. I just cannot wait. So let's just, what do you say, we just get right into it. Lost the teaser last week. Yeah, if you didn't notice that. Because the Lions, it's Can't stop any. I don't know. That game had no bit. When that game got up to 53.5 and a divisional championship, NFC, a conference championship, I was like, boy, this is not good. This is not good. And it never really had a chance. Of course, the Chiefs led the entire game, which was not good for Bro Exotic. Good for our part of the teaser, but then not good for the other half. Clearly, just, you know, you tease the dog up. We even talked about that. I just hate doing that. I hate teasers anyway. It's the only one we do. We've only done like 3 teasers in show history. And every year it seems to be when the NFC-AFC championship. We hit ours last year. But yeah, that's the end of that. So we'll just count that as an L towards the ATS. 74-63-2 is Danny Belts. It's crap. Bro Exotic 12-6. The Young Woken 13-8. All Green Bay Phoenix with him. He's a one-trick pony. All Green Bay Phoenix. And they're going to be rolling early today. Boy, it seems like they do that a lot. This Josh Moon loves to get the degenerate gambler going before they get down their lunch. And I have to say, I love it. So we have the Super Bowl approaching, as you all know. This is where they give all of the humans in North America, particularly the male, whatever those are these days, another week to not worry about all the stuff that's happening. This is really smart on them to give the Super Bowl an extra week. And that way it builds up the hype. And then this is usually when politicians can get some really crazy shit going, because now no one's really paying attention. Like, for instance, instead of giving the Ukraine $200 million a day, we'll just give them $255. Who's going to know? Or the Chiefs are playing the Niners. We have a whole nother week to burn. Yeah, no one knows what's going on. Nobody cares. Nice hat. Yeah. So this is going to be interesting. So this is a good week for me to just get away from the NFL, because honestly, I'm already kind of sick of it. Yes, I know. And I'm not nearly as sick of the NBA as I am the NFL, which is just unbelievable. The NBA has been very, very incredible this year. It really has been. There's really no way to get around it. Now, there's a stretch with some of these games have been really bad, particularly the TNT games and such, but mostly the games I've watched, pretty good. And I'm enjoying it. A few teams I'm following, especially one, and we're going to get into that right now. I understand that the NBA seems to be one of the more, not to say fixed, but the NBA definitely seems to be almost programmed, right? And that is because mostly when you have that few players on the court, 5, and you happen to have a super team, you know, you're going to win a ton of games. You can put a super team on a football team, kind of, but there's 11 people, a lot of moving plate. You know, the Eagles found this out, I believe, with Andy Reid when Vince Young so prolifically put the dream team, and then they didn't even dream their way into the playoffs. But in basketball, it's almost a certainty that this is just going to happen. You rarely see this occur when you have all of these Hall of Famers on one team at one time. So if you didn't know, and I'm sure you do if you follow Instagram, as we talk about the episode Hiding in Plain Sight, this is what is happening right now with the Clippers. Like a tiger waiting to pounce, or like anything else. Right now, James Harden and the Clippers are an absolute carnivorous beast that is devouring, eating at their leisure, and yet no one discusses it. It's unbelievable. And go look at all. Go try to find, oh, the Clippers are really winning. You might get a little thing from the, you might get a couple, but it's nothing. It's nothing. It's still the same. It's Boston and Denver. You know how it is. But I'm just looking around the room like, well, I don't know. I mean, there are some damning things here you should look at. How about the Clippers right now are 3rd to win the NBA championship, right below Boston and Denver? Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to once again go to the odds makers and look at them to see who we feel the best teams are. And the Clippers look like they're pretty good. But before we get into the Clippers, let me tell you a little poker story. Reason why is because it sets it up nice, and I haven't talked about poker in so long. I'm not really playing, so I got Jones in going. So just listen and just give the money. A wolf in sheep's clothing is a little different than hiding in plain sight, but sometimes they can intertwine and sometimes just be interchangeable. So for all intents and purposes, we'll just do that because I'm lazy. But this would be more of a wolf in sheep's clothing, but this gentleman still hides in plain sight. For those of you who don't know, we have a lot of new listeners. I categorize poker players A, B, and C. A means one thing. You are not a professional, which is what most people are. Just because you're A doesn't mean you're bad. There are six subcategories in A, and there's some pretty good A players. But A players have certain characteristics that make them A players. These are the people I am looking to engage with. Then there's the B players. B players are basically some professional, but a heightened level of the good A players. And these guys don't give away much, right? They don't like to show their cards unless they set up bluffs. I'm not going to go through all this now. We'll revisit that over the summer. But primarily, you'll see a lot of B players, and then you'll have some Cs. Cs, to me, are only professional. C players, this is what you do. Does not mean you're necessarily awesome just because you're a professional, right? You could be an A. You can't be an A player and professional. You're typically a B. But just because you're a professional doesn't mean you're awesome. You could be profitable, which you probably are. This is what you do. You have to be to survive. But C players, these are the ones you want to stay away from. These are the guys that are very difficult to read. They're sporadic. They do things against the book, typically. They'll also use GTO and a lot of other things. And when these things start to combine and compound, this is what makes up a C player. And on this particular table, there is absolutely a C player. And this guy is crazy. He is insane. He hides in plain sight. He is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He is Mr. Charismatic, Mr. Personality, the nicest guy on the table. We all know the routine. Daniel Negreanu talks about it all the time. Just be nice to people. And yeah, I think it will benefit you in the long run. I do. Subconscious, you may not do something you normally would because you like the guy. Maybe you don't make him pay as much as you should, knowing he's going to call. I don't know. I've seen this. I've done this. But in this case, this man is he's one of a kind, as far as I'm concerned. I've played against him several times, probably 20-something times in Mississippi. He is a C player. He is a professional player. He can utilize many different styles. He is erratic, and it is organized chaos. If you don't know that that's how this man plays, this could be a problem. Here's the bigger problem. Even when you know that's how he plays, it's still a problem. And that's why he's a C player. He is not in the business of being tracked and caught. He sets traps you don't see, and he is excellent at disguising everything he does. And this is why, or I'll show you or tell you now, what this looks like when you have a wolf in sheep's clothing, or in this case as well, someone that is hiding in plain sight. This guy, you can see him. He's everywhere. Okay. For those of you who don't play poker, and I know there are a lot that don't, I'm going to make this as elementary as I can. A poker table is circular. No, I'm just kidding. This guy is on the button, okay? And I'm on the big blind, so I'm two spots to the left of him, the crazy guy, all right? And then behind the crazy guy, towards the under the gun, towards the guy that's first to act on the poker table, is a very solid C player. He is the opposite of this guy. He is ultra conservative. He likes to squeeze. He likes to win small pots. This is how he wins his money. He is excellent. He has a lot of money in front of him. So does the crazy guy. It's a 2-5 table. Now, I know the other guy will weigh out nearly every option under the sun. He may pray to 7 different gods before he makes a decision. I've seen clock get called on this guy several times. He thinks. He doesn't think. So you think he's thinking, he's actually thinking. And he's a smart guy. So whatever going on up there, well, it's probably working out. Because every time I see this dude, he always has more when he stands up than when he sat down with. And I see him an awful lot. Now, not as much these days, but I guarantee you these guys bump heads all the time, which makes this even more frightening to me. So anyway, now that you know that, the guy that's under the gun, he's first to act. He bets $25, so that's going to be the price to play. And you got a couple guys that call into this guy who's in middle position. This is the conservative player. So you have about $80 in the pot, and he comes in for a $150 three bet. So here's the raise, $150, and he undoubtedly, in my opinion, is looking to take this down now. That's a pretty big bet. He might get a call. I don't know. He's not one to really play trash. What he's probably doing is trying to squeeze this out in a strange position with a semi-good hand. I don't know. We're going to find out, though. So fold, fold, and then the crazy guy, who normally would raise on the button instantly if he had anything, this is a 4-bet in the making, he just casually calls the $150 bet from the dealer position, which is very strange. That does not show how this man, this crazy man, plays. Now, already, I'm sitting here like, I don't know about this. Now, I have king, queen. Now, before you say anything, just listen. I'm not going to get into hand strength or whatever. Typically, you know, with what I had in front of me and what this pot's going to be, king, queen's probably not, it's not suited. Not that that matters that much, but this is a hand I probably don't want to engage in, especially with three or four people behind me. And this is a hand I don't really want to get. It more or less wasn't where I was sitting. It was the fact that that guy on the dealer button just smooth called this 150. That's not like him. So I maybe picked up on that. I don't know. Maybe the other guy did. I have no idea. That got me out the hand, and not that I really would have played this anyway. So everybody folds on the other end, and now we're going heads up. So the guy that made the initial bet was the last guy to kick his cards. The other guy's in mid position, and this guy's on the button. The bet was 150. They both called. So we go to the flop. What could we have here? This is going to be interesting. 3-3-5. I remember this. Again, I can see both this guys because the dealer, the guy on the button, the crazy guy, is two spots to my right. And then the other guy is only a few spots up from there in the middle. So I have a good view of the showdown here. And this was epic. And I'm trying to get through this one as quickly as I can, but it's important you understand this. So I know this guy's very conservative. He's first to act. He's the one that needs to bet. With a flop like 3-3-5, nobody probably hit anything there, especially with that size of a raise, or you know, a three bet pre-flop in this instance, probably getting rid of a lot of the trash like 4-6 and things of that nature, or 3-5 or ace-3 or whatever you want, however you want to call that. So he makes that bet, and this is where, again, this man, from what I've seen on the button with nearly anything or anything good or not, is going to apply pressure. He does not. He calls. So this gets the other guy that made the bet scratching his head too. This is not typically how this man plays, but all I'm thinking is he's definitely setting up, like, this is a bluff. He has nothing. He's representing a monster hand. This is how he's playing this. He's trying to be slick, and that's what I think the other guy is thinking. So he calls I think it was like $400. He overbet this one. It was a big bet. And the other guy calls. And the turn is a 7. That's pretty benign. I don't think anyone's going to be having pocket 7s in this situation. They could. If you have 4-6, well, then you just hit the straight. So that's possible. But I we don't think the 7's going to play. Or anyway, this guy reached. I don't remember how much he came in on 4th Street, but it may have been around like a rack. Maybe 800, 900, 1,000. A lot of money in front of this guy again. He comes in, makes that bet, and then the guy on the button, the crazy guy, just thinks forever, and he calls. Calls. Now, you got to think about this for those of you who don't play. This board really is not helping any straight or flush. There's no draws here, really, in this situation. Ace-king, if you're bluffing ace-king here with a guy like that, this is a bad idea. That guy definitely has something right now with showdown value, okay? The river's almost irrelevant at this point because of the crazy guy. So really, both these guys have to have a big hand, which makes no sense because no one's raising. It's just betting and calling. In these two profiles of player, it fits one, but not the other. But I've seen this guy do this 10,000 times. I've seen him change things up. This is what makes him good, the crazy guy. So he makes that call. I have no idea what this guy has. I really don't. This is one of the, I'm sitting here like, we all know this guy's a wolf. He's nuts. Well, this will be interesting. And the river is a 10. And the 10 is interesting because a 10 is a hand you may still hold on to. Pocket 10s. If you had 10s, you may think with 10s, not probably 9s, but 10s is probably the minimum of what you would begin to think, this pocket pair could win me this. This guy's got ace, king, ace, queen. He's missing everything, and he's continuously betting. You know, jacks, queens, kings, aces, maybe. But that guy's the conservative C player is analyzing the crazy guy, and this is probably what he's thinking. That 10, did he hit a set of 10s to make a boat? Because that beats me, because that guy undoubtedly has aces or kings. I think at this point the guy has kings. I think he has pocket kings. What it looks like to me, the way he's doing this, not doesn't matter why, but I'm already like queens or kings, and I'm not even in the hand, but this is where I pay. This is where I have the most fun sometimes is watching all this. As I've said, I pay attention to everything. This is when all the information is going to be given out for free. Why be on your phone when you can be in the real game? That's how I look at it. Now, the guy also has to think this, too. He could have 4-6 and could have a straight on the turn because this guy's nuts. He knows he's nuts. But the only two hands that could really beat him now in his head, if he has kings, are 4-6 and pocket 10s. Potentially pocket 7s, but probably not. There's no way. I know what he's thinking. There's no way he has aces. So maybe he has pocket 10s and he's set up. But this guy decides that he doesn't. So he doesn't go all in. but he goes for some value. He thinks he has the best hand right now, and he wants a call. So he basically makes the same bet that he did on the river. So let's say he bet 1,000. I don't quite remember. On the river. His bet was smaller than what it should have been. I remember that. The other times this guy made the bet, the crazy guy would wait forever and call. This time, he beat him in the pot with an all-in. So me and Benny had a joke about this. It sounded like this. I bet 1,000 all-in. Just cut his bet all-in. Gets it all-in immediately. So a snap all-in. And let me tell you something. This pot just got really big. Now this guy's got a big decision to make. Is he pot committed to this? That doesn't look like it. I mean, he's got a lot of money in there. I mean, he's probably committed because he has a premium hand. So there's no doubt he's going to call. He's scratching his head, and I know what he's thinking. This guy is so conservative. This is a snap call for 99% of the world, because guess what? He does have pocket kings. This is a snap call for most people, not for him, because he knows the crazy man could have full house with tens full. He knows he could have 4-6 and turn to straight. I've seen him do that. He knows this. And he calls, because he thinks the last thing this man can have is what? Pocket aces. And then he shows him the music. He called the bet with pocket aces. He called every bet with pocket aces. And then jam shoves on a 10 for $9,000 and gets a pretty quick call. And he hid the whole time in plain sight. No way this guy has aces. He would have, oh, well. Even the pros get fooled by pros that they know. A wolf in sheep's clothing. He hid in plain sight the whole time. And we know that he does that, and it still happened. It still happened. It's one of the more unbelievable hands I've ever seen, because of the profiles, and they knew each other. The NBA and these players, they know each other too. They know each other real well. Hell, sometimes they even go out and vacation together. I think it's trash. My point is, there's no need to be friends off the court. Stockton and Malone hated Michael Jordan and Pippen and vice versa. I love it. That's what's good. You know, the minute Major League Baseball, I started losing steam, is when players like Johnny Damon left the Red Sox to go to the Yankees. Kevin Youkilis. When Youk went to the Yankees, I was like, this is over. I was on the back end of his career. I don't care. You can't go. You can't put. No. I'm sorry. That's like Tom Brady going to the Jets. Can't do that. So I like to see some of these rivalries, you know, still intact. But these players know each other well. And everyone knows James Harden. Everyone. Everyone knows Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard. Okay? There's some interesting things happening here. And much like the poker scene that I just described, everyone knows that guy has the potential to pull some crazy stunt like that. And everyone knows the Clippers have the same potential, but yet it's just like the guy, they walked right into it. They just don't care. I don't know. The bettor doesn't seem to care. And the reporter doesn't seem to care. Which means I probably do. Thus, here we are. Say what you want about James Harden. We'll get to all his stuff. I won't say stats, but stuff. I think it's different with Harden. There's so much good and so much bad. I'll call it stuff, not stats. But the talent outweighs the baggage 100%. You can read me his bad games and stats and yada yada. 100% his talent outweighs the baggage, in my opinion. I'm not saying he's the end all, right? But this man knows how to play basketball, which we'll get to. So when James Harden arrived to the Clippers, it was a disaster. It was a mess. They lost their first five games with James Harden, who joined the team on November 6th. Lost their first five. Harden had a couple lowlights. One, he threw the ball like nine rows up out of bounds. It was ridiculous. They looked horrible. They looked like it was subtraction by addition. I was railing him like a fool with everyone else, not even thinking this could happen. And now that it has 180, all the haters like myself seem to just go away. You know, kind of like Mina Kimes. Yeah, you know. We'll do a story on Michael Bennett and how he was racially profiled and accosted by the Las Vegas Police Department and how we need to cancel the police, you know, and all this stuff. And then we see the surveillance video and we see it was 100% live. What we don't see is a makeup interview. Right, there we go. Right, just tale as old as time. But I'll be the first one to say that I was unbelievably wrong. James Harden right now His assist to turnover ratio probably won't wow everyone. It's 20th. That's the highest it's ever been for James Harden, because even in his MVP runs, he's very turnover prone. But he's 5th overall in the NBA right now. 5th. That's a little taste. That should be scary enough right there. In order to be 5th in assists, you can't shoot the ball 40 times a game. So what's going on with the Clippers? Well, it looks like he's not shooting the ball that many times per game. Who's on this team? You know who's on this team. But to my knowledge, I'd have to go back and think. The only time first four ballot Hall of Famers have been on the floor for the same team at the same time was probably the Lakers, when they had Kobe, Shaq, Gary Payton, and Karl Malone. And then they lost to the Pistons in the finals, which we've discussed on here several times. Brutally in 5. Should have been a sweep. You could kind of get close to that depending on if Rondo's a Hall of Famer with the Celtics. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer if he's a Hall of Famer. Also, I think he just got arrested. I don't think that matters. It's very difficult, right? The Heat. You might have had that there, but then where's the third? They have 4. Make no mistake. You all know Kawhi Leonard's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Okay, so is Westbrook, so is Harden right now. Paul George, I don't think he's a... Paul George is one of the best players I've ever seen in my life. Tell me what he can't do. Paul George has the half-court offensive ability of Carmelo Anthony and the defensive ability of a man his size that can play defense. He's one of the best players I've ever seen. His problem is himself and these injuries he can't help. But make no mistake, this man stays healthy. He's going to Hall of Fame. Go look at his stats. He's ridiculous. He can guard 1 through 4 almost. Guy's a house. Score everywhere. Defend. Pass. Does not foul. Does not show emotion. Sign me up for him now. This is an all-star team. We're not even... that's the first thing that should hit us in the face. When's the last time we've seen anything like this? Well, Westbrook and Harden are washed up. Are they? Are they? Since losing those first 5 games, well, they've won 27 of 35. They're 27-8. And in that streak between December 2nd and December 20th, won 9 straight, which was I call the West Coast plowing tour, as they went into every team out west and ass-piped them for free. Love it. But yet no one talks about it. Why? Harden's going to start acting stupid, start acting ridiculous. James Harden's last 10 games, he's averaging 16.3 points, 9.6 assists, 9.6 with 5.1 rebounds. These are some of the highest stats this man's ever put out in the other categories. 16 points a game is fine for James. He's only shooting it 13 times, Harden. Sometimes less than 10. Less than 10 shots for James Harden? 32 minutes, less than 10 shots? It's not because he doesn't want to shoot. Maybe he does. But he's already understanding it's better to pass. He's hiding in plain sight. 9.6 assists with 1 turnover in that ratio in the last 10 games. 4 first ballot Hall of Famers. In that streak, they beat the Suns by 30. They beat the Thunder by 11. They beat Boston in Boston by 20. And Harden made Tatum look like a fool on both sides of the court. I watched the game. A fool. Hiding in plain sight. But yeah, let's talk about the Nuggets. It's almost like the sports media doesn't even want to talk about an amazing story when they have to. And thank God that on November 18th, 1982, in Baptist Hospital in New Orleans, Danny Belts was born for you to be able to get it. Otherwise, you wouldn't. Then what would we do? You'd think Kawhi had won an MVP by now, but he hadn't. He's been up there. Hey, let's get to that. Actually, let's start in 2014. I'm going to read you some names. The top 5 voters for MVP. I got to let you know who these guys are. Because as much as Harden gets crapped on for the way that he plays, and I understand it's ugly. We don't like all the Euro step that he... I thought that was pretty cool. All the 3-pointers where you're kicking your leg out, leaning into people. Yeah, that got old really quick. Kind of ruined the game for a little bit. But Harden's only operating within the confines of the rules. So change the rules. And they did. All right? But don't act like James Harden can't get in the lane whenever he wants. Right now. And don't act like James Harden doesn't handle the basketball similar to Kyrie Irving. He crosses the donkey out of people on the regular. Don't act like James Harden isn't one of the top 20 players that can't get his shot whenever he wants. He's one of the few players that can do that. It's one thing to be able to take your shot whenever you want. It's another thing to be able to get there whenever you want. He can do it whenever he wants. Still. And I'm not worried about his scoring ability, but he's lost a lot of weight. Looks kind of vascular almost. The dude does not look like some fat bum that was with Philly. Go look at him. Picking up half court in the fourth quarter. I haven't seen James Harden do that since Arizona State. This is scary, and he's hiding in plain sight. In 2014, Durant won the MVP. LeBron was second. Griffin was third. Noah, don't sleep on Noah, was fourth. And Harden was fifth. 2015, Curry won. Harden, second. LeBron, Westbrook, AD. 2016, Curry wins the MVP. Kawhi, number two. LeBron, Westbrook, four. Harden, five. 2017, Russ wins the MVP. Number two, Harden. Number three, Kawhi. See a pattern here? Then LeBron, Isaiah Thomas, 2018. Harden wins the MVP. LeBron, AD, then Dame, Westbrook. 2019, Giannis wins. Then LeBron, Harden, Luka, Kawhi. Did you hear a lot of similarities? Did you hear a lot of common denominators? Yeah, Harden's in every one. Westbrook's in half, and so's Kawhi. Paul George doesn't have these injuries. He's up there too, and I still think he may have his day, but he doesn't need to be the MVP. He just needs to be Paul George, play great defense, and put in 25 while shooting 58% from the field. Yeah, we'll all take that. This team is stacked. Absolutely stacked. Statistically, they're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. On the other side, one of the best offensive teams in the NBA. They have one of the best efficiencies in the plus with the basketball. There's not a lot of turnovers happening with guys that are turnover prone like Westbrook and Harden. What they've evolved to now in plain sight is James Harden taking the ball primarily up the court with Westbrook as a second option. They run guard high screen and rolls with two huge guards in George and Leonard. Make no mistake, they're just two huge guards. They run out four guards. Who cares about position? That high screen and roll allows them to do whatever they want. This is the most dangerous double option screen and roll I've ever seen. On one side, you could run it with Harden and Kawhi, and the other side, George and Westbrook. And make no mistake, these two point guards can get in the paint whenever they want. Whenever they want, in plain sight. I got them at +1,000 to win the title a month ago. Now they're +650, and Pinnacle has them at +600. It's going to keep going down. Here's my point. We don't need the Molly music on the record. I think they're going to win. You should bet it. If anything, you can probably hedge and get out. I can't see him losing any sooner than the West Coast. I keep saying West Coast Finals. Then the Western Conference Finals. You could be like my boy over here, the tight C player, going $150 three bet into this nut who just smooth calls him, and he knew something was up, but he still lost. Why is it that everyone looks at this team and doesn't even think they should be betting him? The dollar amount on the Clippers isn't even high when they play. How is that even possible? Good. Because not only are they winning, they're covering. You know how I feel about that. It's hard just to go to some bum squad laying 13 and randomly win by 17. It's not how this works. It's how it works with them right now. Double digit wins out the ass. Some of them penetrating, intimate, ass pipe. Belts, you want to talk about the Super Bowl? No, I don't want to talk about the Super Bowl. We'll talk about that next week. I want to talk about the Clippers. Harden, Westbrook, Kawhi, and George. And how they've won 75% of their games since that losing streak ended in mid-November. And we are in February, basically. And yet, they still hide in plain sight. Well, not to us. Not to the educated Anadotians. Speaking of educated Anadotians, where's the lineup? Mr. Producer, who are we going first?
Can I ask what pronouns you go by? What pronouns would that be? It's 2023, so... This is my trans wife's place, originally. You married a dude.
Well, that's a bit of a problem. Looks like it's you who's in need of a gender education.
We must try not to get canceled.
Prepare to be canceled!
Bro Exotic joins the Sports Antidote. What's going on, bro?
What's going on, dude? Bro Exotic, Vice Pope of Cow, Church of Woke. What's going on, dude?
Sick. There's a lot going on, pal. I'm going to lead off real quick. Look, I know that Baltimore did not cover. And we know that sometimes the woke equation, much like the Bible, will lead us in places that we don't know why we're there. Everyone knows this. But I have to ask, and everyone's been talking about it, even though the game did not go well, the wager, the Buffalo Riot Wings, however, that probably did really well in Baltimore. Go ahead.
See, that's another facet of the woke equation that you're just not quite understanding, dude. There's still ways of making money. And the woke equation kind of like told us that, dude. It's like, you know, we're going to go high on the Ravens. We're going to set up a bunch of Buffalo Riot Wings. And and as soon as a white man hits Lamar Jackson to hate crime, and then, yeah, we just set them all up, dude. And as soon as he hit them, dude, they burned down to the ground, dude. We were making profits. Insurance money is crazy. And we're getting really loud and rowdy out there peacefully, though, mind you.
Peaceful. Those are peaceful riots.
Everyone. All peaceful riots, dude.
Peaceful riots. Well, bro, Exotic, I'm glad that you once again fugaboot everyone. You threw that out there to help build up the momentum, inevitably just to burn it all down and make a bunch of money. You sound like the smartest guy in the room to me.
Yeah, dude. That's just how the woke equation works, man. Sometimes it'll just be an illusion. Like you think we're trying to make some play on this game, but while you're looking at that play, we're over here making hand over fist in Buffalo Riot Wings burning down to the ground.
I mean, yes. And those wings, I imagine, were on fire.
Oh, in fuego.
Yes,
I don't want to culturally appropriate, but they were in fuego.
It's okay. And plus, it's impossible for anyone from the Church of Woke to culturally appropriate. But I know you're just saying that so others don't.
Everyone knows this. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, bro, Exotic, we have a Super Bowl coming up. I'm sure you're from. You know, you realize what's happening. We have a week to come. Until then, clearly, we still need you on the show. I know there's something burning you right now. I was reading that in the Wall Street Journal. What's going on, bro? What's the problem?
Well, dude, you know, it appeared last week, dude, that I mean, Taylor Swift just has a Me Too body armor that's just impenetrable.
Wait, hold on.
We tried to do
bro, bro, impenetrable. Impenetrable Me Too body armor.
Yeah, dude, we thought we could put our cancel review. And then she goes out here and you know, her man, Dr. Travis Pfizer Kelce, goes to the rescue, dude. Puts up a big game. So yeah, the council review didn't really work too much on someone who's just impervious to being canceled, apparently.
I mean, we all know you can't ground Butters when he's a vampire. How can you ground that which is ungroundable?
We all know this. Women's rights.
Young Woken knows all about that. And you're telling me that Taylor Swift cannot be canceled right now by the Church Woke. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, we just got a setback on the council review. That's all we're saying right now, dude.
Okay. I get it. You're not giving a company statement. I understand that. Can I ask you that? You're working on it.
Well, it's in the works, dude. Yeah, we're gonna get a think tank together. We'll figure this out.
Excellent. Speaking of body, this is it. This is very interesting. Would that be Me Too body armor? Explain to me maybe the, not necessarily the fabric or the specs, but how does that size up next to, let's say, the white privilege body armor?
White privilege body armor. Yeah, it's about as solid as glass, bro. We just smash that open. Hashtag Alex Jones. Yeah, we don't really roll with that too much, dude. It's I'm always looking for the white privilege body armor, dude, so I can just knock that down and just and crack that one open. So no, it's not. It is nothing. It is nothing compared to the strength of the solid Me Too body armor of Queen Swiftie herself. So I don't know, dude. This one's gonna look really hairy, dude. It looks like we're gonna have to just bow down to Taylor Swift's impenetrable. Me too. No, I think we're going to go with the 49ers, dude. We're going to go with the 49ers minus 1.5, and we are going to full-on cancel Taylor Swift and her MAGA red and all the white privilege that comes with it. You know, this 1.5 quarterback of color, Patrick Mahomes, Candy Reid, and Travis Kelce, dude. We're gonna cancel a lot of them, man. We're going to full-on just cancel Taylor Swift and the Chiefs in general, dude. So we're going to have to go with the 49ers in the woke paradise of San Francisco, D minus 1.5.
Could the Church of Woke possibly be in some sort of upcoming sales collision?
No, I kind of just pulled an audible, but
yeah, I think the Church Woke is going to cancel them. The sales collision here, though, is you're going to have to cancel these guys, bro. We're not going to lose faith, but I know you can get this done.
And, yeah, dude.
And how you audible me and suck me into thinking you're doing the Ravens, and then you do a on-the-record 49ers. This is great. It's a great move. I like this move.
Yeah, dude. And then we're just we're getting really strategic here, dude, because, you know, Taylor Swift, she's going to be on her Eras tour in Japan. And then try to fly over to the Super Bowl, dude. But we are in the construction right now of Buffalo Riot Wings all over Tokyo. We're going to go World War II on this country, dude. We just can't have Taylor Swift just simply, you know, showing up in her MAGA Reds again, dude. You know, pulling on for the white privilege of the Chiefs. So we're gonna be shifting our Buffalo Riot Wings ventures out there in Japan, dude. Hopefully that'll put some defense up there for the 49ers to pull one through.
I'm going to say something offensive, but I'm going to have to do it. But Buffalo Ride Wings of the Orient.
It's not
that offensive, slightly. But I feel this is a great business venture. Bro, before you roll, Mr. Producer is waving his what? Mr. Producer has the first question of all time. He's fascinated with this body armor thing, and so am I. He wants to know what women's rights body armor looks like. I hate to put you on the spot.
What is going on, women armor?
Well, it's basically the same thing, dude. Same thing as Me Too body armor, dude. So, but I mean, like, you know, with that, we really don't know how strong that is, dude, because we're about to cancel Taylor Swift faster than a CNN Plus subscription, dude. Because, I'm more of an MSNBC guy myself, dude. Hashtag Rachel Maddow, hashtag women's rights. But yeah, dude, so the Me Too women's rights body armor is only as strong as we make it, man.
Well, Mr. Producer, there's your answer. I hope you wrote all that down, because that came from the top of the mountain. Oh, bro, Exotic, it's been a pleasure. We look forward to having you on next week. Thank you for giving us your pick preliminarily, the 49ers. There's no way you can side with the MAGA red. I know the Niners have red, but it's not MAGA red. That's the Chiefs.
Yeah, that is for sure, dude. So we're going to go 49ers. 49ers win 30-21.
And he's throwing out a score. Write that down. 49ers in the over. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Bro Exotic, we look forward to having you on next week, and your boss will be on with us. Just letting you know.
Dude.
I mean, of course, you know that. I'm just telling everyone else.
Women's rights.
Women's rights. See you next week.
All right, dude. Yeah, no jokes, stay woke, and we'll see you next week, dude.
Bye.
Hashtag Woker Bowl.
Let's fucking go, coach. You remember me? Let's go. The Young Woken joins the Sports Antidote. What's going on there, Hoss?
Ooh, man. Another great weekend in Green Bay, brought to you courtesy of Josh Moon.
It would appear you have been going to a lot of games and seeing a lot of wins, and now you are witnessing and beholding the first place Green Bay, Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, Phoenix. Sorry, I butchered that. It's unbelievable they're in first place. It's crazy.
It is, yeah. Somehow, some way, your Green Bay, Phoenix find themselves atop the Horizon League standings right now.
The man's just a really good coach. There's no way to get around it. He's a good coach. I have a lot of people watching these games now. There's no way to get around it. He's in game. He's really good. He has productive timeouts. And Green Bay, typically in a half-court setting, scores out of these timeouts. This is the mark of a good coach. But to change a dumpster fire like this that quickly is insane. And I want to talk real quick before you get rolling today. I had one question. What's the stud's name on that team, the transfer?
Noah Reynolds.
Okay, he came from Wyoming.
Correct. He committed. He transferred to Wisconsin this season, this offseason, and then came up north.
And came up to the real squad. All right, I had a buddy ask me, and I was like, well, I'm going to talk to him in a minute. So there it is. Young Woken, I mean, what am I doing yapping up? This ain't my bit. The floor is yours. Take us away.
Well, yeah. As we talked about last week, we hosted Chokey the Bear. Oakland came to town. We had the Phoenix plus the 2.5. That was a huge game. As Belt said, that was for sole possession of first place. That was a hell of a game. You know, there are 15 lead changes, 8 ties. The game was tied 50-50 with 6 minutes left. I was there. It was awesome. And, you know, basketball is a game of runs. The Phoenix, they went on an 11-0 run in 3 minutes. Oakland did cut the lead to 5 minutes or to five with a minute left. But then we hit a huge three to cue the warm up the bus chant. And your final there was 59-69 Phoenix. What a win. What a crowd. There were 3,516 rowdy Phoenix fans there. Largest crowd since 2019.
And you should take full credit.
Yeah. That I'm sure you all saw the assistant coach. We dapped it up when he was coming out of the tunnel at halftime. I gave that man a full-on bear hug after the game. It was awesome. I chatted it up with Josh Moon on his way off the floor as well. And then we had Detroit again on Saturday. We took the Phoenix yet again, minus the 11.5. We busted out the throwback unis for alumni weekend. Sundance, he was rocking a pink jacket with a baby blue shirt.
Yes.
It was a questionable look and a questionable start to this game by the Phoenix too. But Noah Reynolds, our boy, he went and got 34 points while freshman David Douglas Jr. added another 22. The Phoenix won and covered 78-64. 2-0 on the weekend for your boy. The Phoenix formula improved to 13-8. And the wildest stat of all time stayed alive. Sundance is now 7-0 against the top 20 most violent cities in America. We only have three more regular season games against this list. It's IUPUI, Cleveland isn't even a state, and Northside Milwaukee. So Sundance has the opportunity to go 10-0 against this list in the regular season. It would be an absolutely astonishing feat.
To go 10-0 versus the most violent cities in the country has never been done before.
I doubt it.
It has not. It hasn't because no one even knows where to look for that stat. So therefore, it hasn't happened. So we're going to go ahead and take full credit for all that, too, when they inevitably go 10-0 in the most violent cities in the country. It shows the battle test nature of this team. You know, you get that grinded out win like that against a pretty good team in the horizon. Did you have a chance to talk to Greg Campy again by chance? No?
Actually, I did. I walked by. It was kind of during introduction, so it was kind of loud, so I don't know if you heard me. I was obviously booing the Oakland bench. Boo, Oakland, boo. Classic, getting their head. And then, I said, Greg Campy, you fucking suck. I don't know if you heard me. Some guys turned around. He was probably locked in. But, no, I mean, one hell of a stretch that we just went on. 6-2 record in January, that's always good. 8-2 since Christmas. But, hey, you know, welcome to February. This is the home stretch here. And now, actually today, this morning, probably right now, 11 a.m. Central tip. Spotify will probably inevitably cuck here. And so I don't know if it'll let Belts get this up in time for tip. But so I hope you're following me on Instagram. But IUPUI.
How do we follow you on Instagram?
Yes, yes. They better be.
How do we do that?
You follow me at The Young Woken on Instagram for all of your Green Bay Phoenix memes.
Oh, the best for all your great. I mean, we're the number one. I don't know if you know this. The Sports Antidote is the number one Green Bay Phoenix outlet in New Orleans, Louisiana. It says it on our Instagram bio. It has to be true. I mean, it has to be true. It also talks about my book, the 173rd bestseller, Feed the Family or Jets plus 12.5. I suggest you go buy that book. And clearly we know what I did. Opted to take the Jets again and lost. But the Young Woken, you know, where is this conference tournament being played?
So we play that in Indianapolis, which is one of the most violent cities.
That's a violent city as well. This is not looking good for the rest of the Horizon League. That game should be somewhere in like the UP of Michigan, and that would be a problem. But being as where it's not, it is going to be right in Indy. That is incredible. So, Young Wilkin, we look forward to having you. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to just roll you here. What else we got with the Phoenix?
This game going on right now. So, you know, the Phoenix were 13.5 point favorites right now. It's been flipping back and forth between 13.5 and 14.5 since the line opened, which is interesting. You know, that's a lot of points, no doubt about it. I mean, we beat them by only 10 last time we played IUPUI. They were 15.5 point dogs on Sunday against Wrong State, and they only lost by 7. They just beat Purdue Fort Wayne a couple weeks ago. I mean, we only beat winless Detroit by 14 this past weekend. I don't know. Wait. Sundance isn't just undefeated against the top 20 most violent cities in America. He's also 7-0 ATS in those games. Oh, we're only giving up 60 points a game to those violent cities, and the Phoenix are averaging 77 points a game at home in conference play. So screw it. On the record, give me the Phoenix minus the 14. Hashtag Phoenix formula.
The Phoenix formula on the record. All these things give me a little swell down low. I love it. Well, I look forward to watching these games. There's a lot of people listening to this that all of a sudden are watching Green Bay Phoenix, and somebody may have ordered a sweatshirt, and it wasn't me. So there is definitely people walking in South Louisiana with the Green Bay Phoenix basketball sweaty, a hoodie, no less.
They can wear it with pride this year.
Damn right they can. It's a first-place team. That's all I know. So, Young Wokey, thanks for jumping on the Sports Standalone. Once again, you've been incredible. Now, officially, anything you'd like to close with? I did not mean to do that earlier.
You are fine. So, yeah, we're going to be off. Excuse me. We're going to be off until next Thursday when we travel to land stealing Robert Morris. So not too much going on this weekend, just the game against IUPUI. Green Bay, we did receive 19 votes on College Insider's mid-major top 25, which equates to number 35 on that list. So people are taking notice of what Sundance is doing with this program. But go Phoenix, hashtag IUPUI.
That's right, man. Hashtag just give the money and give to the Phoenix. We'll see you next week.
There you go. See you next week, Antidotions.
This guy, this big, powerful guy. This guy is, he is a monster. A giant of a man.
One really large person.
I've seen a lot of people over the years. Big people.
You know, I have a friend. Big guy, one of the biggest in the world.
This big, strong friend of mine who weighed like 250 then, which 250 then is big.
Hello, Antidotions. This is the Drunk Neighbor. I am coming to you live Monday morning. I have not talked to you guys in a while, and a lot's happened. This is actually going to be a surprise to Danny Belts as well, that I'm going to leave a quick soliloquy for him. I've, you know, been listening to the podcast, been cheering on the Phoenix. But I just had to get in on this action. I missed you guys. I wanted to give you a quick update before I go back into hibernation. And maybe I won't go into full hibernation, because I would like to maybe occasionally give you guys a little LSU hardball, a little baseball. Sun's out this morning, so it feels like we're getting closer and closer. But before we turn the page to 2024 in college football, let's talk a little bit about, I've been promising this for a while and have not been able to get it to you. It's been hectic, and really there hasn't been room for it on the show, but wanted to talk a little bit about what LSU did on the recruiting trail before and after firing Matt House. So I think one of the places we're going to have to focus on, I want to call out a few guys that LSU signed and has on campus from this recruiting class, and some of them are already actually enrolled. Before I go to the defensive side of the ball first, I want to talk about two guys that LSU signed on offense. Caden Durham, running back out of Texas. Guys, we lost Diggs this year. He went into the transfer portal. Something weird was up with that. I think anyone that watched the bowl game, they watched him go in for like a snap, got kind of injured, walked off, was tweeting a bunch of weird things, and I'm so over the mental health shit. I'm glad that they didn't pander to him, let him walk his happy ass over to Ole Miss and go win 8 or 9 games next year. I know everyone's on the hype train for Ole Miss. We'll talk about that as we get closer to the season. They are the national champions, if you ask anybody right now. Them and Ohio State. Ohio State did add Caleb Downs. I want to talk about Nick Saban, but let's stick to this real quick. So Caden Durham is going to come in and be an immediate player on this team. Caleb Jackson is going to be the main running back, but watch for this kid, Caden Durham. He's a freshman that I'm really going to be paying a lot of attention to. Another one that LSU brought in this offseason, kid from Zachary High, Tre'Dez Green. All right, so he's 6'6", 6'7", right in between. Tight end. He's only been playing football for a few years. Folks, this, if you remember Stephon Sullivan when he came to LSU, and his career didn't work out the way that we, I think, most were hoping for, but this kid looks a lot like him. He's huge. The number one tight end in the country. And LSU keeps recruiting great tight ends, so it's going to be hard. But there's an opportunity for this kid to even play wide receiver. I know with his transfer into Zachary, he wasn't able to play basketball very much this year, but he is a basketball player too. Unbelievable athlete. Watch for him in the spring. He's going to be one of those guys that stands out in pads immediately. Another guy, just their LSU's offensive line, absolutely. Brad Davis is doing an incredible job at LSU recruiting this position. Weston Davis, a kid they flipped from Texas A&M. I want you to go on YouTube and type in Weston Davis basketball. This is a man that is almost 300 pounds. Watch his basketball highlights and try not to get excited about this man playing football for LSU. But a couple of guys that we're going to – the number one guy that I think is flying under the radar, it was another guy that they flipped from Texas A&M. His name is Xavier Atkins. This guy, he's not going to – he doesn't have the highest recruiting. He's not like all five stars like, you know, Harold Perkins was or anything like that. But if you watch this guy's highlight tapes, he's only 6 foot tall. He's only 195 pounds. But, man, he is a piss missile. Watch out for this guy to make hay and get on the field very early for LSU. I really like that. But some guys that LSU is going to absolutely need this year, they flipped Dominic McKinley, who's the number one player in the state of Louisiana, defensive tackle. Big boy, 6'5", 280. Probably going to have to put on some more weight. They're going to need him to play because, frankly, with Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo both going to the NFL, Mason Smith, I don't know who's advising that guy. It's outrageous, stupid. It's retarded. I don't know why he thinks he's going to get drafted in the first four rounds of the NFL. I don't see it. He needed another year. But, you know, mama wanted more money, so he went to go get more money. They didn't match his NIL. Frankly, I'm over Mason Smith. I'm ready to move on. But you're going to need guys like Dominic McKinley. And they signed another guy out of, let's see, his name is Sean Washington. Gigantic man. 6'4", 309. He's from Warren Easton. Played at Georgia. Went to community college. Now he's at LSU. This is a guy that has to immediately step in. So those are some of the guys that I'm going to be really excited to watch in the spring and going into the fall of next year. Sean Washington, Dominic McKinley, you need both those guys to step up. LSU's made some great hires over the last few months since we've talked. Bo Davis, defensive line coach, best defensive line coach in the country, played at LSU next to Booger McFarland, was on the strength and conditioning team with Nick Saban at LSU, has been in Alabama, was at Texas. One of the best pulls they had. And I think the whole Brian Kelly to Michigan was hey, go get me some guys on defense that I can actually use, people that are going to recruit. And LSU did a fantastic job on defense this offseason. They went and got Blake Baker as defensive coordinator. They got Kevin Peoples to coach outside defensive line. Now, I like this because LSU is already going to be loaded at that position this year. With Deshaun Womack, and they've got multiple other guys returning. Savion Jones is a guy that you're going to see a lot next year. But now you have somebody. They went from not having a defensive line coach to having one for the interior, one for the exterior. Get excited about that, folks, because I don't expect LSU's defense to be that much better next year, but they're going to be building something there, and it's hard to build in this day and age in college football, but I think Brian Kelly's putting the right guys in place. And, of course, Corey Raymond, defensive back coach. I think anybody that has paid attention to LSU for the last 25 years knows that name, the godfather of DBU, if you will, and I will. And he is already on the recruiting trail for LSU. They signed another, or got commits from another defensive back in 2025, helped finalize this class 2024. They have Terry Bussey, a five-star that they're trying to flip from Texas A&M for this class. Watch that. He's going on his official visit this weekend. That would be a huge one. And I know this isn't a recruiting podcast, so I'm getting deep into the weeds here, but just wanted to call out a couple of things because I think it's going to be important. One of the things I wanted to talk about, I don't think we've talked about it on the show yet, I don't think anyone has, is Nick Saban leaving Alabama. So I was having this discussion with my wife, who just nods her head and just agrees with everything I say like a good wife. I told her, I said, college football, the head coaching job at an SEC or Big Ten school is way harder than being almost any job in the country, maybe other than president. It's way harder than the NFL. If you look at the calendar, Google college football calendar, and I'm not sure if it'll show you every single detail in there, but there is no off season anymore, folks. You've got the transfer portal. You're recruiting year round for 24, 25, 26, 27. You're also recruiting your own roster. See Lance Hurts' fat ass going to Tennessee, which I'm very disappointed in, but what are you going to do? You're also going after your other transfers that you want to bring in. So you're evaluating throughout the year. And by the way, LSU is going to have to, in the spring portal, which another portal comes up right after spring. So you have to keep these kids happy the whole time, is going to be LSU is going to have to go and find some interior defensive linemen. The only good thing I like about the spring portal is it is not you can't get a kid transfer in interconference, which I think is good because enough is enough. I don't want to see our guys going to Alabama. But Nick Saban leaving. And by the way, you have signing day in December, signing day in February. You go right into the season. It never ends for these guys. So it is the hardest job in the country, in my opinion, being a coach, especially at a program like LSU or Alabama where the expectations are so high. Nick Saban retires after probably his best coaching job. I said it all last year. I did not think that that team was that good, but he kept bringing them to the next level. They say what you will. Greatest coach of all time. I don't think I'm breaking news with that. But when he retired, you saw a lot of rats jumping off a sinking ship, which I don't actually think it's a sinking ship. Kalen DeBoer coming in is a different kind of coach, but also a very good coach. I mean, like, we're looking at a guy who brought Washington with not a lot of stars on that roster. Let's be very frank about that. Obviously, they had Michael Penix this year. Their wide receiver crew was great. Their offense was very good. Their offensive line won the Outland Trophy. It should have gone to LSU. Should have gotten it. But whatever. I think that they're going to be just fine. I don't think it's going to be the Alabama of old, obviously. But I don't think anybody is going to be able to have the dominance the way that Nick Saban. I think that's the last time you ever see a dominant run quite like that. I know we had Georgia win two national titles and then absolutely obliterate Florida State in the Orange Bowl this year. But you're not going to see it where it's the same team with the number one recruiting class, number one coming into the season every year, and just dominates week in and week out. You could run the ball 60 times and win against most of your schedule. It's not going to be like that anymore with all this recruiting, with all the transfer portal, the coaches' schedules. It's outrageous. So, it did Nick Saban in. Wish him well. Very happy he retired. This was a long time coming. I've been wanting him to be gone for a very long time. And now that he is, I think that you're going to see, I mean, Brian Kelly steps in as the winningest coach in college football, not history, winningest coach in college football now. And there's an opportunity to get ahead. Now, are they going to have recruiting classes like Nick Saban did year in and year out? Probably not. Although they do have the number one recruiting class right now in 2025, long way to go until you sign those guys, which just speaks back to that calendar. But they're going to be – LSU has an opportunity to take hold and be in the top two, top three every year in this conference, even with Texas, even with the run that Georgia's on. I think LSU's positioned well. My expectations going in 2024 are I'm – confident, but they still need a lot on the defensive line. I don't think you can run out what you have right now and expect to win 10, 11 games, especially in this conference, especially with that schedule. Obviously, you can't drop a first game the way that you did the last 2 years. You're going to have to beat USC in Vegas. So, LSU, very excited about this offseason, if there is one. I'm looking forward to the fact that we've got all Louisiana coaching staff, guys that either played at LSU, have coached at LSU, or from Louisiana, other than Brian Kelly. So Brian Kelly has figured out what he needs to do to recruit the boot. They're going to have the high school class coming out of 2025 in Louisiana is fantastic. So he's set up well there. They got a guy named Keelan Moses. You might remember his brother Dylan Moses. Spurned LSU when Les Miles left and went on to Alabama. Didn't have that great of a career, but he was the guy that was on the ESPN cover whenever he was a freshman in high school. Incredible. I mean, great high school football player. But his brother comes in, commits to LSU just a couple months ago, and is recruiting the hell out of this. I mean, they've brought in the three number one players at quarterback, running back, and receiver so far. One from Louisiana, Harlan Berry, running back. Reminds me of Darren Sproles. Quarterback Bryce Underwood out of Michigan. They went head-to-head and brought him home, brought him back to Louisiana. That's going to be, I mean, the guys can walk in and probably start his freshman year. And then DeCorian Moore, wide receiver out of Texas. Just put on the highlight tapes, folks. I don't watch all the high school games, obviously. I don't have that much. I have a little bit more of a life than that, but still should be very excited about this guy. Let's talk baseball. LSU, defending national title. I think they're going to make another run this year. We'll go more into that whenever I sit down with Danny Belts, but I'm very excited about this upcoming baseball season. Obviously, replacing the greatest college baseball player of all time in Dylan Cruz, and the pitcher, Paul Skenes, probably the best pitcher I've ever seen in college baseball, and Paul Skenes. You can't replace those guys, but what this Jay Johnson is doing, it's almost Nick Saban-esque. I'm very excited about what's going on there. LSU basketball, who gives a shit? Will Wade's gone and dominating. So let's cover that on another episode, but very excited about this offseason. Happy to be back with you folks. God bless. Go Tigers.
Thanks for joining the Sports Analyst with your boy Danny Belts, episode number 189, Hiding in Plain Sight. Boy, just like on that poker table, just like on that court, boy, these dudes are hiding on that ass. Thanks to the Young Woke and the Drunk Neighbor and Bro Exotic and Coach O and the Woke Pope. What a mouthful that was. Be sure and tune in next week for the annual Super Bowl episode, in which I make fun of the NFL and the Super Bowl for 16 hours. And no one listens to it. No, I'm just kidding. Be sure and tune in next week. We've got a good one. The Green Bay Phoenix continue to win. The Drunk Neighbor continues to report on all things SEC. Bro Exotic continues to bring the pain. It can't get any better. Keep it real, Anadotians.